Blog Talk Radio.
I thank it for me. Yes, I am. Ring bang da da da, dang da da da. That's it. A revolution. Yeah. I'm on fight for revolution. Ring dang da da da, dang da da da. A revolution. Yeah. Rasta fight up that revolution. Dang da da da, dang da da da. That's it. Where people down for mountain, them a make big speech. But poor people, the food not reach. I man have to wonder how them really sleep. Them living in the pool while the poor are feeling heat. Red country, why it's red country, why? In the ghetto part of town, you ain't nothing but a victim. We're just trapped in a political system. There ain't no one to say let alone. If you teach the big man a gunshot, them broke your bone with stone. Why? So a revolution, yeah. I'm inside a revolution coming in a Babylon land, yeah. A revolution, yeah. A hot revolution. Of government, what is your aim? Where is the plan? Where is the future for the younger generation? If there's no light at the end of the tunnel, well, young your stuff, I go red like hell. For man, the peas are cooked, but the rice can't well. So no more big speech. Time to come action. Crime and the violence rampant in our nation. People say it's because of separation. There's got to be a revolution, yeah. What a hot revolution, wriggling in a Babylon, yeah. A revolution, yeah. Guns, knives and cutlass revolution. Dang da da dang, dang da da bang. All you false leaders, I brand you as traitors. Nothing but poor mongers, idol worshippers, them a sorcerers. Yo, you better come down off of your pumpkin pride. Stop taking poor people for a joyride. Cause all you teach is to divide and rule, and I use the people them with your political tool. Just fool, sure. Cause a revolution, yeah. The poor going to see the revolution. Ring dang da da ding, dang da da ding. A revolution, yeah. What a hot revolution. Ding dang da 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 da. Whoa, whoa. No matter how them a come out and a kill off them teeth, yet the poor man the food not reach. Tell them all to practice what they preach. Cause I don't want to see them all a pagan preach. Whoa, cause a revolution, yeah. I'm on fire for revolution. Ring dang da da dang da da. A revolution.
Greetings and welcome to the Chef Rob Show. I'm your host, Chef Rob, here at Blog Talk Radio. My voice is a little messed up, so bear with me. Every now and then I may go ahead and play a few extra tracks tonight because my voice is a little screwed up. Tonight I want to make this like part one of a three-part series. We'll probably do this the whole month, probably. Let's see if we can do it every day. Because I was looking at the Claude Anderson piece on Powernomics. And I had seen it a while back, but it was just something, there was a few things that stood out to me. And it just coincides with what I see some people trying to do, but they're not connected with other people. I mean, there's egos in place and a bunch of ridiculous silliness. So, and I think this thing needs, this that Powernomics needs to be pushed out. Also, I'm going to go ahead and see if I can get that other version of, I think it's Dr. Benz and Amos Wilson. I like to go ahead and play as much of them as possible. I don't like to run my mouth. I mean, the brothers and sisters put it out before us, and we need to just keep on listening to that and keep that message going and then implement what they've said. I think the biggest part, the hardest thing we have is implementing what they're saying, do how they saw it and how they saw it at that time and before them and how they saw it for our future. And some of the things that they've said about our future has come to fruition. We need to go ahead and pay attention to what these brothers and sisters are saying, because they were telling you what's going on, telling you what's coming up. Man, this thing is making noise. Stop that shit. So, we really need to go ahead and pay attention to what a lot of these brothers and sisters are saying, because that's our future. I mean, we can't go ahead and stop with us. It's like a no-brainer. 626-488, your line is open. State your name, where you calling from?
Hey, it's Covina, man, from Los Angeles, California.
Hey, brother, how we doing?
Good, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm glad you're here, man. I need to run a sound check. I want to see it, because I want to play this part from, because I couldn't go ahead and download the whole thing. It was a problem. So I want to go ahead and play something real fast. You ready? You got your dancing shoes on?
Yes.
Okay, so I just want to know, let me know if the sound is good, okay? Here we go. How was that, brother?
Yeah, I heard it loud and clear.
Okay, yeah, I'm glad you liked that, man. I like that track, man. That will make my booty bounce, man. I'm like, okay, baby, come get me. But I want to use that to play the Carl Anderson thing, man, because I couldn't get it done just right, you know. So, and there's parts that I want to go ahead and play. It's like 120 minutes, but I want to play like 40 minutes of this, and I want to go ahead and have a beautiful discussion after that, because we need to kind of like take it slow. Actually, I should have went edited and go ahead and broke it down like 5, 6, 10 minute segments. Think.
Yeah.
So, you got anything you want to put out there in the beginning, brother? Because I listen to you guys a lot, and I miss listening to you guys on Saturday, man. I had changed my set schedule to go ahead and listen to you guys sometimes, man. Let's add to that. So, you got anything you want to say right now, brother?
No, not right now, man. I listened to the clip, and then, I had my 2 cents in. I think it was a great lecture, and I think that if you're playing that one from the YouTube, I couldn't catch the year that he had made that in.
You know what? That was my issue too, man. That's the thing. But I'm looking at it like this, because he made some references to some years back,
yeah.
Like Mondale and who was this? And Newt Gingrich and stuff like
Newt
that.
Newt Gingrich, yeah.
So you know that, it went way, way back. So I was trying to go ahead and pick up on that.
Yeah, I'm thinking that was.
But anyway, the stuff he was saying made a lot of sense. Is there anything that you seen the whole video?
Yeah, I watched the whole thing. I think that if I'm thinking right, it probably was during the Clinton years, because I'm pretty sure he would have said George Bush or something if he was in office. And plus the kind of fashion or whatever, it kind of looked like it was dated sometime in the 90s. You know? I remember hearing Dr. Carl Anderson. He used to come on, like, often here in L.A. on a show called The Front Page. You know, this was back when he was just starting the Powernomics. And, I was hearing from him and the whole, black folks need to work together ideas. And, plus he used to come out here and talk in the Reverend Price's church. And that particular clip is in that church here in L.A. So, you know, I know he's been around for a while, man. I just think that clip is old. And I'm just remarking, you know, and what he said, that by year 2013, that blacks would be a permanent underclass. And we're like, what, less than 100 days from that?
We just minutes from it, you know, and it's something else to think about. If you look at it, he might just be a little bit off, but he on track.
Yeah.
He on track. Here, let's play some of that. Let's listen to that
All right.
real quick.
All right, go ahead.
I come here this morning to talk to you about something very close to my heart. I'm not here to offend anyone. I'm here to speak to you as Geronimo talked to a general in the 1880s in the mountains, not too far from here. When he met with him at a peak conference, a powwow, said to him, he said, this morning, I will speak to you the truth. And I want the truth to be like arrows to go out from my heart, my soul, to your mind and your body. I want each and every one of you to understand what I'm talking about this morning. You see, I'm very profoundly disturbed. I just left Tuskegee, where black folk are suffering. And I'm very disturbed. I go across this country, and I cannot find the sensitivities and the concerns about black folk in America that I want to see. And the only minister that I have seen and heard from any place in this nation has been Dr. Price, that is telling you what you should be listening to. And I've spoken all over this country and all over the world, representing presidents and governors. And he is the only minister I've run into so far that violates all the social norms that were exacted on black folk back in the 1790s as this country began to move into an evangelical movement. And they decided in the 1790s that it is now permissible to have a black preacher or to have black folk invest themselves into religious experience. And the establishment of this country said, yes, we'll let blacks have their own separate services, but we must pick the minister. We must pick a minister that is controllable. And we must tell him exactly what he's supposed to do. We will license the ministers. So by the 1720s, the entire establishment in this country is set up a system saying that any black minister in this country, he has an admonishment. He must teach black folk three things so that religion will become a control device to help us maintain the status quo on black folk in this country. He says every black minister who we select or we license, they must teach black folk. First of all, when you talk about the Bible, you talk about the master and the slave, you are talking about the white master on earth and the black slave. You must certainly teach black folk to be humble and obedient and accept their life lot and to be respectful and loyal to the white servant, to the white master. And lastly, you must teach black folk. You must teach black folk that they would get theirs in the hereafter and pie in the sky. And that went into effect in the 1820s, and every black minister fell in the line and did it. And it stayed like that until after the Civil War, when 119 blacks on October the 19th walked into St. Paul's Church, Baptist Church, in Raleigh, North Carolina, and said, we can't take it anymore, as black folk, the suffering is too acute. And said, we must at least have 40 acres and a mule or something. You cannot just turn us loose, free, and say we're free. And give us non-economic emancipation, where we are penniless, poor, impoverished, sick, broken, busted, uneducated, ignorant, homeless, nothing, and say we are now free. And that is the only minister, Dr. Price, that I've heard that understands that. That you got an obligation in the ministry to go above and beyond that punishment put on black folk over 150 years ago. Now, in this area, maybe some of them don't like it. I don't care. I learned to respect a man of distance, and I fell in love with him last night at dinner. And if I can ever be of any help to him in what he's trying to do, he's got my help and my institute's help. And so this morning, and the time has been allotted to me, I want to talk to you, as I said, like Geronimo, but I want to be like the great European philosopher Diogenes, who walked through life with a lantern in his hand, saying, I want to lighten the darkness because I'm in search of an honest man. But like Diogenes, I want to walk through his temple, through Black America, the new movement I'm trying to create. I want to find not necessarily an honest man. I want to find some black people and some white people that understand the problems in America. I want to find somebody that understands in America that contrary to popular myth, black folk are not progressing in America. Black people are going backwards. In comparative proportional terms, black people in America, where you were in 1850 in this country, you have not progressed. You're still in your same dilemma, contrary to anybody tells you. And you see, if I cannot, I want to find, like Diogenes, I want to find a black person who understands that black folk are not progressing. But more importantly, I want to find somebody, black or white, that don't mind being black and want to talk about the racial problem in the society. I can't even find that with my lantern in life. We got three or four major black organizations in America. Three. The Urban League, NAACP, the Rainbow Coalition, and one other one. I can't even get them to focus on the issue of black folk. One wants to take care of cultural diversity. One wants to be talking about multiculturalism. One wants to talk about minority issues. The other wants to talk about oppressed people. And I asked them across the country, why don't somebody talk about black folk and the problems of black people? And so I'm looking like the Ozzy for a person that understands the history of this country, because I want to understand the problem in America. And the problem is not what you all have been taught. The problem is not poverty. It is not unemployment. It is not unwed teenage parents. It is not food stamps. It is not public housing. It is not drug abuse. Black people only got two problems in America. The first problem is that you've been systematically locked into the lowest level of a real-life monopoly game. That's your major problem. And that's what Dr. Price directly and indirectly is telling you about every Sunday morning. You have been locked into a no-win situation. That means that all the wealth and power in this country has been skewed over 400 years systematically into the hands of the majority white society. Black people don't own a significant amount of anything to be able to control their lives. Whites in America right now control almost 100% of all the income, the wealth, the power, the resources, the businesses, the privileges, and all levels of government. You cannot compete. And I'm tired of hearing people telling black folks, why don't you compete? Compete with what? What are you going to compete with? They keep saying, well, black folk can run fast and jump higher. That won't make it. It won't make it. And let me tell you what monopoly is. Monopoly means that all the wealth and power has been skewed based on skin color, going white, yellow, brown, black. And if you've never played the game of Monopoly, let me show you how it's played. I play it every year with my family. It means that everybody, when you sit down, you're given a certain amount of money and wealth. Black people never got their 40 acres of the mule. Now we're playing this game of Monopoly, and let's pretend for a second in this auditorium that whites got $1,000 to play the game of Monopoly. Asians got $500, Hispanics got $300, Indian got $100, and blacks got $50 to play the game of Monopoly. Now, never having gotten your 40 acres of mule, you don't own any land. You don't own any land. And if you don't have the money, you can't put any houses and hotels on the land. You got lucky and had some. Now, when you roll the dice in our hypothetical game of Monopoly, and you roll the dice and your number comes up on the wrong piece of property, what happens to you? You must either go bankrupt or go to jail. And that's the Monopoly game that black folk are locked into. And when that happens to you in life, when you only got two alternatives in life to either go bankrupt or go to jail, that is called an underclass. And black people in America are systematically being forced into a permanent underclass. We will be a permanent underclass by the year 2013. And you got about a 2.5-year window left. If we don't do some very specific things and start to come up with some very cogent strategies, comprehensive strategies of doing some things to focus on that number one problem of redistributing the wealth and power back into the hands of black folks, you can hang it up. Don't worry anymore about retiring after the next 2 or 3 years. Don't worry more about going to college. It ain't going to work. The doors are going to slam shut on black folks. And what I'm telling you right now is we're going to have to get it together fast. And to do it, you must first understand what I'm going to be telling you this morning. And my speech is going to be divided into three parts. I'm first going to tell you about the problems of black America realistically. As co-chief and Geronimo said, I'm going to give you the truth about the current state of black America, point one. Two, I'm going to analyze it for you. And three, I'm going to give you the solutions that we can do together to come out of it. Okay? Now, we got a very serious problem in that monopoly game. We're going to have a converging forces, social forces coming across this country, about 8 major forces that will push us into that understructure and that underclass position. And let me talk about 3 or 4 of them right quick. First thing, across this country, you're going to have an increasing amount of conservatism. Now, I want you all to understand up front what conservatism means. So I don't care whoever uses that word, you know what it means. Conservatism is a new code word for anti-blackism. Okay? Except now, a conservative can stand right in your face and call, tell you, and confess that he's conservative, which means he is a racist and not tell you he's a racist. Racism right now, we got racism all over America, and I can't find one racist. And what I'm telling you right now, before my book even hit the market, I'd already predicted in my book that you're going to have a cutback in welfare. I predicted in my book they're going to catch people like in Texaco. And they just caught Avis discriminating against blacks in North Carolina, South Carolina. And they just caught Circuit City, Sam, Walmart. I knew they were going to try to cut out the single amendment districts. I knew they were going to go after affirmative action. I knew there were going to be riots all over this country that's coming. I talked about this a long time ago in the book. Because that's what conservatism means. Conservatism comes from the root word to conserve. To conserve means to hold on to what you've got. Or those who ain't got, as my mother said, a third grade deaf education, you ain't going to get. That's what conservatism means. And it means nothing else. It means maintain the status quo. It means use every device that you have to give the pretense that what you see is normal. And right now there's a conservative move in this country going from the White House across this land to the Congress that says whatever exists all over this nation and in Los Angeles is normal. They want you to believe that it's normal to go out there and see all the drug abuse and all the crime, all the poverty, and all the suffering of black folks lying and sleeping on the streets, drugged out, doped out. They want you to believe that's normal. That's what conservatism means, maintain the status quo. It also means to reinstitute white authority, white values, so you hear me talking about family values and all those other kind of things, and also white superiority. So when people start talking about they want to go back to be a conservative, you ask them, what are you trying to conserve? When my people don't own anything and you own 100%, what have I got to conserve? When you hear blacks going around screaming about they're a black conservative, you ask them, what are you conserving? Tell me one point in history that you found something that you want to conserve. Don't let people run that game on you about being a conservative. You tell them, fine, you want to tell me what are you conserving? And when my people never had anything, why would they want to be a conservative? So the biggest problem we're going to have is conservatism when it goes across this nation. And we as black folk got to understand. Now, it's not all whites that are conservatives. There is an element that's got everything that want to make their degrees over need. They want to hold on to everything. And we're going to have a massive flow. Everybody's going to be talking about conservatism. You're going to see people politically switching, talking about they're moving to the far right. And what we have to do is understand that, and that's going to create major problems in this country. One, you're going to not only see an increasing amount of negative hostility towards black folk, every piece of research in the country tells us that, even from the Jewish organizations, that you're going to see more anti-blackness now and in the future than you've ever seen in the last 60 years since you left the civil rights movement. Two, you're going to see, we see organizations all over the country now, paramilitary groups, Aryan groups, Viper, Free Man, Skinhead, Baldhead, all kind of groups that are organizing optimistically expecting and anticipating a major clash in this country between blacks and whites. We've had 28 states in the United States now to pass concealed weapons laws. That's specifically so some of the white contingency groups can carry weapons and arms at all times. That's why you have such a major thrust in the National Rifle Association. That's why they're controlling most of your politicians. That's why you have such a major anti-governmental effort in this country. You hear people say, we want to go back to states' rights. We're anti-government. We'll get rid of the federal government. It's not to be against government. They know that in history, the only people that have ever saved black folk has been the government, twice, the federal government. And if you eliminate the federal government by downsizing the government, black folk no longer have an ally. And if a clash occurs, you got nobody to come to the rescue a third time to help you. You see, you were pulled out of slavery by the federal government. You were pulled out of Jim Crowism by the federal government. There are contingencies in the country that says the next time there won't be a federal government to pull blacks out. And you can talk about their anti-government. That's what they're talking about. They're not against government. And later on, you hear me tell about why they're not against government. Because you see, primary wealth in this country, the primary responsibility of government is to move wealth and to move power. And that's how the dominant society got its wealth and its power, by using government. But now they want to make sure black folks don't have access to it. That's why they're anti-affirmative action, but I'll get into all that a little later. But so the biggest thing, one of the biggest things that's going to drive us in this underclass structure will be conservatism. The second thing is that you're going to have an unending influx of immigrants into the country. And that's what Dr. Price is talking about. And nobody, no black politician, no black organization wants to deal with that issue. They will avoid it at all costs. Even though in their hearts they know that's one of the biggest problems for black folk. We anticipate in the next 10 to 12 years approximately 8 to 6 million Hispanics coming into the United States and 41 million Asians. You have been the majority minority for 400 years in this country. You have been the number two population for 400 years. You're going to get kicked out of being number two. You're going to go down and become number four. Now, common sense, even a third grade education would tell you, if you didn't get anything when you were number two, you all jumped ahead of me, but anyway, you can guess what you're going to get when you become number four. And the worst part about it is as you descend and go down to number four, those other groups are going to go up. And as they go past you, you're going to have major racial clashes in this country. You're going to have fights all over this country between blacks and Hispanics, blacks and Asians, blacks and poor whites. And black folk cannot fight all these groups. Everybody can all not always be against black folk. They know that we are vulnerable and we are defenseless. And we cannot fight those groups. Because you see, they didn't come into this country with the legacies that we are stuck with. Everybody in America has an advantage position but black folk. And with all are in a state of denial. The white power structure in a state of denial. They are pretending that everything that they got, that 100% control and ownership of everything, they got it because they worked hard through a Protestant ethic. That's not how they got it. And you always think that, well, what you got to do, you got to work hard. Nobody can work any harder than a slave. But they're going to keep running these games on black folk. And at the same time, we got black folk that are accepting that. That what we got to do is work harder. And you see, when we get into that in a few minutes about history, what the power structure really wants is what we call unearned income. Slavery was nothing but unearned income for whoever owned the slave. And once slavery ended, that's where Wall Street came from. Wall Street was based on slavery. Everything that blacks were producing went to Wall Street then. And now that all that money that's amassed on Wall Street is still producing unearned income. All that money is producing a regular salary for people who's in stocks and bonds and dividends. They don't have to work. Never had to work. But we're going to talk about that later on. So what I'm saying now is that you're going to have a massive influx of immigrants into the country that are better equipped. They don't have your legacies. They don't have your disadvantages. They're walking across the border. They're going to get a free lunch. They don't have to pay dues. But you got public policies in this country that are equating them to black folk. They're equating them to black, and what we've allowed them to do starting in 1970 is to wrap themselves in black folk suffering and pretend somehow they suffered along with black folk. And therefore, whatever program is created under this misguided label called minority, that they are equal to you and over you. And we're going to deal with that whole concept of minority in a few minutes, too. So that's the problem with the influx of immigrants. And what they are doing is coming to the country and doing what we've never been allowed to do and we've never been bright enough to do in some senses, is to build your own community. You've got to build your community. You see, every group that they leave their homeland, the last thing they do is look in the mirror. They look in the mirror and say, I'm going to America. And I'm going to go to America. I'm going to find me a community or neighborhood. Or I'm going to build one with people who look like me. And so that's why you go all these nations, where they're coming out of Asia. You will find Vietnamese towns all over California, little Cambodia. You'll find a Chinatown in every major city. You'll see the Hispanics come in. They'll build little Mexico or little Havana or little Hialeah. You find little Italy, French town, German town, Greek town, Polish town, but you cannot find one black town. And we are the only people that keep trying to integrate. We are the only people rather than looking in the mirror and saying, I see somebody that looks like me. I want to go find and build me a community of people who look like me. We are doing just the opposite. That's your second problem, is inappropriate behavior of black folk. We keep looking in the mirror and saying, I want to get away from everybody that looks like me. You can't have any power and wealth doing that. If you don't have a community, you cannot rebuild Los Angeles without a black community. If I cannot come in this city, you can tell me where every black lives, where he stays, where he works. You don't have a community. And all of you that want to go in business, don't waste your time. You cannot start a business and operate without a town or a community. Why can't you do it? Because without a community, you have no market. If you don't have a market, every black will go by your store at 200 miles an hour heading for the suburbs and heading for the malls. And that's why you got this major displacement of capital out of the black neighborhood. And I tell black folks, if you want to go in business today, don't do it. Give me the money. I need it. Because you're going to go bankrupt. 80% of all black folks that go into business under the present system, you will go bankrupt within 2 years. You will lose your money within 2 years because you don't have a market. And see, that's how the other groups function. They have their own markets, their own communities. And we're going to talk about that a little later on, too. See, the good Reverend Dr. Price, he gave me 2 hours to talk to y'all, so I'm going to get to all those points, okay? So we got major problems. That's the second thing, is dealing with this influx of immigrants. And what I'm telling you is that they're not coming in here to be your partner or your ally. They're coming in to compete with you. And your black organization and your black leadership in this country is afraid to teach black folks how to compete with all these other groups. And they're afraid because they keep trying to create allies with them. You cannot ally with anybody who's planning on supplanting you. You see, if you go check the Council of La Raza, you check the Council of Salalah, if you check the National Hispanic Defense League, if you check the National Hispanic Party, the first thing that all of them have is to change the issues in this country from white and black to white and Hispanic. They're planning on supplanting you. When the National Hispanic Party started in Miami in 1974, I was in the governor's office there. I was the only black in politics. That was the first item on their agenda, saying by the year 2000, they want to take blacks out of the equation. And that's why, as Dr. Price just said, that's why they control South Florida. They play to win. We play to play. Okay? And when I leave here today, I want you all forevermore in helping Dr. Price to play to win. Okay? The third thing that's going to hurt us and push us into this underclass structure is technology. You got blacks running all over the country telling black folks to be there. Well, what we're going to do, we can overcome racism if we get involved in technology. Won't happen. Technology has never been a friend, an ally of black folks. It has always been our worst enemy. Why has it been? Because, you see, tech racism has always kept us in our place. And technology has always come along and run over that place. That's why technology has always been our enemy. See, when you keep a black man as a porter, and all of a sudden you come along with a floor sign and he's gone. You keep him as an elevator operator and you put a computer in the elevator. You keep him as a dishwasher and you get an automatic dishwasher. You all understand what I'm telling you? So when black people come to you telling you, well, you get technology, no. You said, no. What we have to do is to get control of, get behind technology so to stop running over us. And I got friends in Washington, D.C. going all over this country telling black folks, you got to get into the information highway. And you can get, and you can overcome racism. Whites were not that dumb. You cannot get on the information highway and overcome racism. Because the information highway is like any other highway. It's a transportation system. And what you should be asking yourself is, what are you transporting? If you don't have anything to transport, you can't get on the information highway. So what we got to be talking about is black folk is owning and controlling. It's just like when they invented the highway, the airplane system, the shipping system, the train system. It didn't advantage black folk because we never owned the trains, the planes, and the ships. What we got to do right now, starting with your church, is try to figure out how we can own and control more. Then the highway makes sense to us. Okay? Now, and that's why right now in Washington, D.C., the Office of Technology's last report says that the people that are going to be hurt most by technology are going to be black folk. And a fellow named Jeremy Rifkin has a book out called The End of Work. And he is the director of the National Economic Trends for Washington, D.C. and nationally. He's the guy to put out these trends. He put a book out, and his book, Chapter 5, talks about what technology is going to do to people, and he uses black folk as an example. And I went and sat down and talked with him. And what he said to Dr. Anderson, he said, my publishers tried to make me take that chapter out of the book. He said, I fought to keep it in. He said, because technology is going to kill black folk. And read that book, and that's what he's talking about. He says, because black folk don't have any control of technology, don't own anything. And that's why we're getting ready to lose all our radio stations in this country. We're going to lose all of our television stations in this country. Because what's happening now, they've lifted the allocation cap, and now it's called social Darwinism, economic Darwinism. Whoever got the most money now can buy anything they want in technology. And so the few black states we got in the United States now are up for grabs. And as a matter of fact, even the cable system is going to be up for grabs because we don't have the money and resources. We can't compete with the whites now who want to buy all the systems. And once that happens, you can't get your information in. Now, that would not happen to organizations, to groups like the Hispanics. Because, see, the Hispanics got smart enough, they built communities. Then they took their language and they built a fence around their communities. They use their culture to protect their communities. Where is your culture in Los Angeles for black folks? Where is your fence? And we're going to talk about that later on. You are vulnerable. The fourth thing that's going to happen to you is that this whole contract with white America is not anti-liberalism. It is not anti-Democratic Party. It wasn't even anti-Clinton. What it was, they were trying to answer a question that's been haunting white America for about 37 years. And that is, what do you do with 36 million obsolete black folks? That's what the contract was for. And how they concluded that was, you see, they got 1,200 white think tanks in America. 1,200 white think tanks. You got one wholly owned black think tank, and that's the Harvard Institute I'm trying to run. They got 3,000 employees with a $500 million budget. I got a few volunteers. No staff, no money. But you see, in this country, no black wants to give my black think tank any money to help our leaders to develop policy and public issues. And when I ask them for money, what they say is that we can't give you money. I said, why not? They said, what is your organization for? I said, to help black America. They said, who's going to benefit? I said, black folk. They said, who's going to work in? I said, black folk. They said, ooh, too black. And the first thing that comes to my mind is, How can you be too black? What is too black? 10, 20, 30? What's too black? Nobody ever says something is too Jewish, too Indian, too Asian. And I'm telling you, people are telling me there's too black to come from our black entertainers, our black athletes are making $100 million. They could give the money to us that they're paying in taxes because we're tax exempt. But they'd rather give it to the government than even give it to an organization to help black folk in this country. Because they don't want to be black. And I keep trying to tell them it doesn't hurt that much being black. Now, let me move a little faster. I'm talking too slow. I'm going to speed up now. Go real fast. You all keep up with me. Now, what's going to happen now, what these think tanks decide to do in the contract with America, they found out through their research that approximately 68 to 70% of all the blacks in America work in some level of government. This happened as a direct result of the Civil Rights Movement. See, in the end of the Civil Rights Movement, instead of moving against the problem to get more wealth and power for black folks, our civil rights organizations pushed us over and looking for jobs. And so all of our black folks then, over 50 to 60% of all the blacks that got jobs after the Civil Rights Movement went into government. So 68 to 70% of all the blacks in America are working either in federal government, city government, state government, county government, libraries, and school systems. So when you hear white folks talking about downsizing government, what they're talking about is de-employing and disemploying black folks. They know that. They know that. So in Washington, D.C., they plan on firing 480,000 people. And what the Office of Management and Budget, right out of the White House, says is that for every white person who gets fired, we're going to fire two blacks. Now, if you own 12.3% of the population, and you're going to fire two blacks for every white, you're going to be devastated. Now, let me give you the real picture, even before they started firing black folks. Let me give you the real, true options for black folks. There's only three things that you can do in this world as a black person to earn a living and survive. You either must work, go on welfare, or you steal. Now, for those who missed that, let me give it to you again. You either work up here, you go on welfare here, or you steal down there. You talk about your crime problem. I'll show you how you get into your crime problem. Now, right now at the top level, everybody prefers to work. Now, I just told you that 68 to 70% of all the black folk are working in government. 26 to 28% of the rest of the blacks are working in white corporations. No, white corporations are going to follow the government. They're going to downsize. You're going to see IBM cutting back, Apple Computers, and Meritech, Lucent Tech, now all of them are going to cut back. Only 2% of the blacks in America work in their own stores and their own business in their own communities. Only 2%. They're not vulnerable. Only 2% of blacks are not vulnerable. The rest are vulnerable in America. Now look at the problem at the top. Now, contrary to what anybody tells you, the unemployment problem in America is not 5.2% you hear it there in the newspapers. And we read, that is not about black folks, that's about whites. They're only talking about people who are either getting unemployment compensation or looking for jobs. That's how they're getting that figure. The unemployment rate in America for black folks today is 34% nationally. Now, if you want to understand how devastating that is, think for a second. Follow me along. Think about this. When the unemployment rate in America for whites went up to 25% in the 1920s, they called it a depression. Now, the unemployment rate for blacks hasn't even come down to 25%. But when the unemployment rate went up for whites and hit 25%, they used every level of government. They said it's a depression, and every piece of machinery, money, anything must be used to bring that unemployment rate down. And now with black unemployment rate, not at 25%, at 34%, nobody cares. They say we can't, that's not the role of government to help with the unemployment problem. 34% for blacks nationally. Now, in Detroit, Michigan, Baltimore, and New York, the unemployment rate is 45%. Don't think that's bad yet. I haven't given you the worst stuff yet. In Pittsburgh, it is 49%. And for black youth in this country, it is 57%. That's why you got your problem out here on the streets. But nobody wants to give you the true facts about why you got problems. Now, that's at the top level. Now, when you kick those people off those jobs in the government and out of those corporations, they must go down to the second level. I'm going to show you how you get into the underclass. You kick them down to the second level. But the conservatives in this country have already made preparation for you when you come down to the second level. That's called welfare. They got covered. They said, when you come down here, don't plan on staying here. We just had welfare reform, which means you can't stay here on the second floor either. And now to do welfare, actually, you can only be on welfare for 2 years. We're going to kick you off of that, which means you must go down to the next level. But before they kick you off the second level, look at the second level already. The poverty level in America for black folks is 35%. That means 35% of all the black people in this country got a zero, zero, negative, nil, none net worth. That means they own nothing. 35%. 47% of all the black children in America are beneath the poverty level. I just left New Orleans. New Orleans. That's why I had tears in my voice and my eyes a few minutes when I talked about leaving New Orleans and Tuskegee University. In New Orleans, the poverty rate there for black folk is 80%. And somebody got to wake up. You can't stand that kind of poverty. I'm sorry. The poverty rate for black youth in this country is 47%. That means they can't even make daily bread. For black female-headed households, it is 52% with two children in the family. And nobody cares. Nobody cares. And so they're going to now have welfare reform to kick them off the second level. So now they must go down to the next level. Next level is crime. Your crime rate in America is going to go straight up within the next 2 and 2.5 years. Straight up. Because these black folk are not simply going to disappear and evaporate. Even if you don't care about it, they're not going to evaporate. Now, let's look at the crime rate already. In the most productive years for a black man in this country, for all these black men in this room, your most productive years are between 20 and 35 years of age. And already, 40% of all the black men in America are either in prison, on parole, or probation. 40%. And black women want to know why they don't have any husbands or fathers to their children. In the state prisons, 47% of your state prisoners are black. 52% of your federal prisoners are black. And 96% of all the prisoners in the United States, all the black prisoners, 96% are black men. And nobody cares. Nobody seems to care. Now, this is not new, because you see what's going to happen now. You're going to have a new growth industry in this country. The new growth industry is going to be owning, operating, and building prisons and selling services and goods to them. And there are two major corporations right now, I'll give you the names, have already set up a big contract to take over some of the monies of it. The government passed what's called the Omnibus Crime Bill for $29 billion to build more prisons in the United States. And two big companies have found out they can get $82,000 for every jail cell they build and $27,000 a year to operate the prison for per prisoner. And just in all those black prisoners you find, just the black male prisoners, for supplying them with shaving lotion, unarmed deodorant, and soap, That is a $3 billion a year industry if black people don't get a penny out of it. People are already making money off of our people in prison. And nobody even cares about where the money is going, how they're making the extra money, even after they criminalize you. Now this criminalization process didn't start here. So let me get with the public policy and show where everything started and analyze it with history very quickly. The whole problem goes back to six.
Okay, that was some powerful stuff there. I was shocked when I first heard it for the second time. There's a lot of stuff I missed that first time. So, hey, brother, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, man. Yeah, that is powerful, man. Hearing it again, too, for, you know, second time.
Yeah, man. It was rough, man. I was like, wow. And there was a lot of stuff you said, and I think the clip is about, it's pretty old. So a lot of stuff you said back then, a lot of it's, you know, you can go ahead and look and see it and feel it and touch it.
Yeah.
And it's so sad. I think it's really sad that a lot of us are not paying attention to what those who had a vision like this brother did.
Yeah, man, and I think, you know, I heard about that, you know, like I said, I was saying before, I heard about that years ago. And you know, it's like having you know, being able to look hindsight. Things haven't really changed all that much, man. Even though the people have the ideas about what to do, and you know, he was working with a few million dollars to get his Harvest Institute, you know, rolling on what he had to do. And I don't know, you know, I don't know where it is to now. You know, now I know he was going to come out with Fish City franchises. I don't know what happened to that. It kind of disappeared, or at least I don't know about it.
It kind of got off the ground, but so you know, tomorrow I'm gonna go ahead and do another piece on where that stuff is tomorrow, because I've seen some interesting stuff with that, because I want to play the rest of the tomorrow. But you know, I just wanted people to go ahead and listen to that a little bit and try to educate themselves on where we need to go. Because a lot of, like this brother was putting it down. We had brothers before him putting it down, and so on and so forth. But, you know, when are we going to fucking pay attention to these plans? When are we going to fucking listen? What does it take?
Yeah, that's a good question, man. I think that, you know, that what he was saying, I think that was in the 90s or something, that, you know, looking back, I think that is more needed to just having a plan, because it's like he has a good roadmap about what to do, but what's missing in the equation is how do we do that? How does it go from a Dr. Claude Anderson thing to a we thing? How do we get involved in it? And I think that, you know, that's something that probably more people need to put their hands together to try to figure that out.
You know what, brother? You know, I'm gonna tell you what somebody told me, man, and I was trying to stay away from that being nice, but Mr. Holison told me a while back in a conversation, man, that, hey, look, you know, do this shit or die. Okay, you know what fucking out. I mean, do this or die. If you want to go ahead and die, just jump the fuck off a goddamn cliff. And at first, I was like, that's hard. I said, okay, you know, let that bitch get out of me and go ahead and be a man, goddamn it. Yeah, motherfuckers, do this shit or die. Just figure out some more shit. Because we didn't, everybody else didn't, we didn't do some shit in that. Let's pay attention to what's going on. Everything's right in your damn face. Or get out my damn way and let me go here and talk to somebody that's behind you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, man. But, you know, my man has the plan, and I know other people, you know, Amos Wilson and other people, they have some really great ideas in it. I think that's the hurdle is how do we go from idea phase to, you know, actually doing something phase.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm always, you know, ready to listen to any, you know, any suggestions, man. I've that has been one of the things I've been trying to work on too. And I hear people with ideas and with visions, But when it comes down to, okay, if you got to build something, that costs money. You need capital. You need something to make this work. And that is always the missing ingredient. And I think that somewhere in this particular clip, this particular lecture by him, he mentions celebrities or ball players that have money.
Yeah, that's later on.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's a business plan. Like, you can't go to people with that have money and say, well, here's a business plan, and that business plan doesn't include how do they make money.
I think he was pretty much telling, he just said, get involved. He wasn't going ahead and throwing it out there like that. And where his brother is, where his brother sounds is like, hey, look, he got a lot of that stuff together. He got a plan once there's somebody come at him. Okay,
yeah.
I think he got that. I think he got that down pat.
Yeah, he got the plan.
He got a pretty decent plan, man. I don't see too much wrong with that. It was a couple of times early on listening to it. I was like, wait a minute, that shit didn't make sense. But when you listen to the rest of it, the other part of it, he breaks down a whole lot of stuff on how to tackle a whole lot of issues, and going into business and try to create businesses is the key. But the part that I wasn't hearing, okay, like you're getting people jobs and stuff, but you're still sending them back to that environment to in a sense. I think the part should have been in the next phase of going ahead once they start, you got some businesses, not to go ahead and create other businesses, go ahead and build up them communities by going ahead and fixing up the homes, putting in some security. That would have helped a whole lot.
Yeah.
Because he was hiring people from within those communities. So if it provided a little bit more security, I think that would have helped it out even that much more.
Yeah, that too, man. I always look at a lot of those communities, you know, where the housing projects or the ghetto communities, a lot of times those areas aren't really, they're black occupied, but they're not really necessarily black community because, like, you know, you have some apartment complex, some high rise or something, multi-unit dwelling. That's not owned by anybody black. So, they get their money from, you know, whether they're working for the government or, you know, welfare or however they get it, that money, it goes to the people that own, you know, the apartment unit. And, you know, whoever runs the local gas stations and the local, you know, food places, that really isn't a black community. That money does not, that money, whatever money they get, it doesn't really stay in black hands.
Yeah, later on, he was also breaking that down, too. He was also saying how the money circulates in other communities about 12 times and how it circulates in our community like one time, change hands one time. You know, people get paid and they run out to the suburbs and go out to the mall in the suburbs.
Yeah.
And you think, you know, and I want to add to that part there. I was thinking, like, okay, well, you're going from one, you know, from the neighborhoods here and go out to the suburbs and you go through those various, to the bigger malls are way, way out. So you got to go through these different little towns and then you might get a ticket. Okay, so hopefully you got enough gas. You go ahead and say, okay, well, gas is cheap out here. You pull over, you're going to get some problems there. It's just too much. To me, it's just too much stuff to be leaving from where you have to be going all the way out to that mall. It can cost you a lot more going all the way out there and giving your money to these other people.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I see that too, man. But I'm like, in order for us to really think about how to bring money into the community, into a household, not only do you need to think about how to circulate money, and if you look at black folks, how much money do they have this disposable income? Is that disposable income enough to circulate and create wealth or net worth, net wealth in the community? So I think that the brain trust that we need to set up economics, we need to think about how do we get money from outside the community into our community? So it's almost like,
That's almost like going ahead and going to those people who help put us in this situation. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm not exactly sure, but I'm like, if you think about, let's say, General Motors and stuff, how do they make money? You know, a lot of businesses want to export to other countries and import money. You want to import wealth into your state or your country. And I think that if black folks need to accumulate money, we have to think like that. How do we get money from outside? How do we take money from the ordinary American and bring it to the black community? If we're just doing it through, you know, trickle-down economics, that's not bringing in wealth. Because most black people, what they have is, let's say somebody is a middle-class black person. What their middle-class black person usually have is a mortgage. They usually have car payments, you know, insurance and everything, student loan debts. Their money is already spent before they even make it for 25 years, 30 years. Their money is already spent. They really don't have any extra money to start businesses or extra money to do anything. So, you know, once we get caught up in that rat race of middle class living, it's almost like you just done. You don't have the availability to create no wealth. That's why I think how Dr. Anderson's kind of plan doesn't calculate how do you take an ordinary person who might have the desire to start businesses and actual where did he get the capital to start a business?
Okay, you know, it's all about finances.
Yeah, you got to, and then if you have, let's say you do, you know, you're a middle class guy and you just have the ability to start a business, now you have two places to put it. Do you want to put it in a community where the community doesn't have that much wealth, then not that much money to circulate, or do you put it in a mainstream area, let's say in that suburb, where those people have a lot of money, a lot more money to circulate? So I'm going to create, let's say I want to create a pizza business. Do I want to put it in a poor neighborhood, the so-called hood, or do I want to put it in a suburb community? My business, if I'm going to make some money, I have a better chance to make it if I put it in a middle-class neighborhood. You know what I'm saying?
Are you sure? You can go ahead and make it in a hood with a
spot? Well, I'm not saying you couldn't, but I'm just saying if you are a person that's going to say, you know, when you set up a business, you have a business plan. There's a business plan model, and it's usually something that you have to have this in order to go to a bank in order to get a loan. You have to have, you know, what's your competitors, what's your targeted population, and certain things that they have in there as criteria. And when you set that up, it's almost like if we want to get this loan to get this business, you have to play by the model of, oh, these are my targeted populations that I'm trying to reach, and this is where money is.
Let me say something real quick. Don't you think? I think the one of the things that Mr. Anderson is saying is it's a problem that we even have to go and ask for a loan to go ahead and start a business. I think that's something that needs to be brought out. We're not in a position. We should be in a better position to go ahead and get stuff from within ourselves. But going ahead and trying to get a loan, and we got to go ahead and go to them and get a loan, knowing that hey, look, you got a few strikes against you going up and trying to get a loan. So I don't think we should. We're working on trying to get our own banking system and talking about finances and how to go ahead and create money and create wealth and keep that conversation going. Creating your own banking system, creating your own credit union. Play the game within the realms of what we got until we get somewhere else where we can do something different.
Yeah, I agree with that, man. I think if going in that direction, you do want to look into a credit union and whatnot, because it's easier, you know, to have a system like that than a regular banking system, because our regular banking system is darn near corrupt.
It's always corrupt. And see, that's something else he was saying in the second part. He's talking about, we had things. We had our own stuff. But this integration thing, it really messed us up. Okay?
He was talking about that
in the next part. And so I really want to go ahead and get into that part too. But we have to go ahead and look at how we can go ahead and be in the business for ourselves. There's a lot of need in the community. It's to me, I can't understand. I was last week I went to a meeting, and where the meeting was in one of those areas that considered one of the roughest ones in Chicago, a lot of killings. Okay, so there's a lot of need in that neighborhood, and on one of the main streets in that, going through that little area, man, there's a lot of need there. There are places with shops, but shops are owned by people that's outside the area. You know, there's a lot of stuff we can put in that area.
Yeah.
Go ahead, brother.
Oh, I was gonna say, yeah, I know you know, the news is full of stuff that's going on there in Chicago, man. It's like, man, it's unbelievable. I really don't know from like outside, you know, looking in, you know, how his brother's making it over there, man, because it just seems like it's super rough.
Oh man, it's all right. Shit. You just drive right around the damn police tape and all them police cars and shit. Do what you gotta do. That's all. Just you stay on your fucking message. I'm being real, man. You know, you'll see stuff going through the city, and you're like, fuck it. You know, I just got to stay on point. I got something I got to do. Okay, if I don't recognize nobody, you know, but hey, stay on point. Because until we build up enough support, you know, we can't tackle this problem.
Yeah.
Okay. So you know, stop and engage and go ahead and get in the way. You know, fucking try to go ahead and play the game the way they say play it to a point. You know, if the ambulance is coming to go ahead and pick up who's laid out in the street, let them get there and get them. Don't be standing around going here watching. Let's just try to get up, see if we can go and get some medical help for a lot of these brothers and sisters laid out in the street. I seen a sister got hit by a car, man. This motherfucker hit her and knocked the shit out of her ass, and she rolled. I'm like, this motherfucker, he just kept going.
Damn.
And if it wasn't for the police that was up there on the next block, man, they crashed right into him, man. I was like, get the fuck out of here. This nigga hit this sister, man, hit her. Knocked over the car. I'm like, what the fuck on, man? So we got a lot of problems. You know, how we can go ahead and love each other, that's another issue. But I think actually, and people might think I'm wrong, but fuck it, money going to kill a whole lot of our fucking problems. But it's got to be done right. Not just throw money at it. It's got to be done with a fucking plan.
Yeah, man. How do we organize that capital, man? That's what I see is the whole road, you know, the thing that's stopping us from moving forward, man. How do we organize that capital?
Mm-hmm. Has to be done with a plan. You know?
Yeah.
But I don't think that we need to sit down and go ahead and devise something new. This brother Claude Anderson has a plan. What's wrong with his plan? And there's a whole lot of brothers and plans out here, but hey, look, it's plans. We can get down there. Don't be no new shit. I mean, so, you know, they told you what was going to happen today. You didn't pay attention yesterday. Not look at what your ass. You're a few steps behind.
My man has a plan. I always like the plan, but it's like, I think when I listen to the plan, is as if, you know, you have, say you're putting together a football team or a basketball team, and you have the right coach, and you need the players, and you need to bring them in, and it's almost like what we don't have is brothers who can actually come out there and make the business. It's like those businesses that you was talking about, so those businesses went away, you know, that was a, you know, generation, two generations ago. Now we're in a situation where a bunch of us who are educated or a bunch of us who might have a little capital, we're working for a government, we're working for the school district. So if I'm out here in like L.A. and brothers want to organize, I can't leave L.A., let's say, and set up shop over in Chicago and set something up if my capital is coming from L.A. It's like how he was saying that you can't, white folks get their inherited wealth. Black folks, their wealth is coming from where they're connected in right now. If they leave from right here, then they leave their wealth behind. So it's like we got to figure out how to organize the capital. How do you organize whatever capital you can spare to organize, you know, either where you went or somewhere else, and that's what we got to figure out.
You know what? I was just thinking. I think we have a team. I think that we got a pretty good team. We always have a good team, but our fucking problem is this: we don't have no bench, we don't have no support, we don't have no water boy. We got fucked up coaches, and we got the worst goddamn cheerleaders. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think we got a team, but we everybody looking at us like, oh man, I play football. I'm like, they looking at us like they're gonna run right over us, and sure as fuck, they run right over us. That's because we didn't got all the other apparatus. We can go ahead and stick with them that first couple of maybe that first quarter, maybe some into the second quarter, but man, shit, no. The next, yeah. We getting run over.
Yeah.
I was, yeah. Here's something else, man. We got Jesse Jackson Jr. here. I mean, this fool is in and out of the clinic and all that other stuff, man. Look, ain't nothing wrong with this motherfucker, man. Okay? Ain't shit wrong with him. What's killing him, what's messing him up, is he might have ulcers right now because the FBI got some shit on him. They about to send his ass to jail. So he got his stomach fucked up about that shit.
Yeah.
Going to jail is terrifying him. It's like, okay. And so we got people like that who's supposed to be speaking up on our behalf, but, they ain't doing shit. Like his daddy. And I think that brother had mentioned about the NAA, about the Rainbow Push Coalition.
Yeah.
He was talking about that, and
he was the three organizations, yeah.
Yeah, and Jesse Jackson and his multiculturalism and all that bullshit. Still, what the brother's saying is, hey, look, who's going to stand up for black issues? I mean, Jesse Jackson got super rich off talking about our issues. Now you're bringing in more people. Shit, I throw another one in there, but no, I ain't leaving him alone. But the thing about the Urban League, they're another bullshit-ass organization. They big-ass office over here, it's over in one of the rough neighborhoods, man, but you should see the cars that go in that place. The people that get out of the cars going in there, they got money.
Yeah.
Getting rich off black people's pain. it's real profitable to get rich off black people's pain.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we always I'm frustrated like you frustrated, man. It's like we have plans, man. We just got to, I don't know what we're missing, Because, I'm ready to move on something. The other brother's ready to move on something. But, where do we go, man? Because, I think we have a few brothers who can probably make it. But how do you impact the community around you? I think that's the other hurdle. Because it's like, I think the brothers who could actually contribute to building a positive black community economically, they probably don't need it. And the people that need it, they probably don't have the resources to do it. So it's like...
Wait. Them brothers who... I think them brothers who you say don't need it, they may not need it now. They gonna need that support later. Look at his name. What's his fucking name? O.J. Simpson.
Right.
Look at that motherfucker, man. Shit, he should have started coming around and stuck where he was at from the fucking beginning. And look at that bastard. That's what you. They was after you from the fucking beginning. Never let you off the hook.
I
seen some come up about him recently. They was talking about going ahead and he's trying to get out of jail and all this other stuff. And I ain't finished reading it. I was like, man. Shouldn't have never been there in the first place, man, if you haven't been fucking with them people.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw the little article, too, man. But, yeah, when I say they don't need it, I mean, like, ultimately everybody, needs help against the system of white supremacy. But I'm just saying, economically, they might be in a situation where they got that, third or fourth car and that, big house and whatever, they probably sitting good. So it's not an urgency that, they can drive by what's going on in the hood or poor communities and it doesn't really stop them. Whereas the people that are sitting there, on the ground level, they need some action and they need it now.
Yeah. Yeah, Yeah, that is sad, man. I don't rap past the corner, man. If you know, fuck you if you don't give a damn. I mean, fuck y'all if y'all don't think I got problems. When I pull through a stoplight, man, and I go in and see a white man put his hand out, and I'm big and I'm hungry and shit, I turn my fucking music up and raise my goddamn windows.
Right.
So motherfuckers be looking at me like this white woman came over to the car and was doing that shit. Bitch, get your ass away from me. But I go to the next goddamn stop and I see the brothers out there with the fucking the tubs and shit banging on them and shit. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Fuck, I whip out a 20 real fast here, brother.
Yeah.
So, you know, these motherfuckers ain't hurt, and that's one thing he say in this video. And it was something else he was saying about the Monopoly game. At the beginning of the Monopoly game, whites got 1,000, Asians got, what did he say? I think he said Asians got 300, Asians got 500, and Spanish got 300, and black people got $50.
Yeah.
So how the fuck you gonna stand a game like that?
Yeah, I don't really see there, you know, there's any way to come out of that. Because he was saying by the year 2013, we're going to be in a permanent underclass. And now I see that already.
Oh. Man, it was another guy said something different. He was like, black people, you know, invited to the, you're in the race.
Yeah.
But white folks is, you're in a 100-yard dance, but somehow the white folks got, they pushed themselves up to the 750 line, and then they go ahead and they shoot the gun and tell everybody to go ahead and start. Everything go ahead and say we point behind. Hey, Tracy, how you doing? Is that you? 404?
It's me.
It's me.
Yeah.
Oh. Hey, Jackie, how you doing?
Hi, Rob. How are you?
I'm all right. How you doing?
I'm well. How have you been?
I've been a little under the weather.
I'm happy I caught your show.
I'm glad you're here, too. I feel a lot better. What do you think about what you heard so far?
I didn't really hear that much. I probably only been there for like 2 minutes.
That is not good. You should have heard the beginning, that Claude Anderson piece.
I heard you talking about a documentary, so that's why I pressed the button. I wanted you to tell me
Say that again?
That's how I wanted you to tell me what it was.
He was going and pretty much giving examples of where we are and how we got here, and he was about to start, you know, about to start working on where we need to go to be in a better place. He was also talking about, he talked about a lot of things, you know, because I still need to hear the whole thing again, but.
What's the name of it?
It was the Polynomics.
Polynomics.
Yeah, with Dr. Claude Anderson.
Okay.
You gonna get it? Yeah, you must. Brother, you still there? Excuse me, sister, real quick.
Hello?
Hey, brother, let me ask you something real fast.
Yeah.
Okay. One thing, when he talked about the fish farming.
Yeah.
Okay? When he talked about the fish farming, you know, I was just at the store a little earlier today, and I was looking at catfish, man. It was $5.99 a pound. And that was on sale.
Yeah.
So one of my biggest problems is with that is going ahead and looking at, man, you know, you got to look at all of the people that's involved to go ahead and push that price up like that. And you go ahead and look at it, man, it's just ridiculous that they push that price up like that when you go ahead and look at all the people who got their hands involved. It's well overdue that we go ahead and get into some fish farming or some other kind of farming, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, fish farming, it can be anything from, you know, eggs or chicken. It can be, you know, dairy farming. It can be a lot of different, you know, products that people can do. And you know, we could do stuff like peanut butter. We could do stuff like toilet paper. Stuff that, you know, everybody uses toilet paper. So there's a lot of stuff that we could be doing. You know, we need to start moving on it, man. Whatever it is that we need to do, we need to start moving on it. And my thing is, I don't know what the holdup is. Like, I don't know what's stopping people from moving forward. Because I know, like, for me as an individual, I can't speak for a group because I'm not in control of the group, but I'm in control as an individual, which is myself, is I always have a plan on the table.
Okay, so what should you do? Because for me, I think in two areas you need to be tackling simultaneously. Any movement needs to go ahead and deal with, one, information and finances.
Okay.
So, you know, you got to go ahead and worry about how you can go ahead and fund any other thing you're going to do. But you got to go ahead and also be able to put that message out there clearly to go ahead and keep it funded and keep it growing and stuff like that. You agree?
Yeah, I agree. Well, I think that one of the things my particular thing that I'm looking at is that you need to have something to show already. Like, if I come to you with an idea and I'm telling you about this idea, great idea to make some money, but I ain't made no money with it yet, then you're going to be looking at me sideways like, oh, if it's such a good idea, how come you haven't done it? So it's like, I think that if the onus is put on the people who really want to do something to go ahead and do it. So we need to go out there, whatever it is we're going to do. As an individual, I can at least do whatever I can do myself. So let's say if I want to do fish farming, I should have a fish farm. And I should be able to show you I have this fish farm and I do X amount of pounds of fish and I get X amount of money. Here it is from fish farm to money made. And I could tell you, hey, this can be a business that you can do also. I'm showing you I did it. This is how it's done. This is the results. Now you're not looking at me sideways. You're looking at me like, okay, how much, I mean, can I get in? So I think that's what we got to do. We have to actually go out there and start doing it before we can tell somebody, hey, you need to start, you know, getting your stuff together. No, get your stuff together first so other people see that that's the model. Now they can follow it.
Interesting. Brother Jerome, you there? Jerome? Go again,
sir.
Man.
How you doing?
You okay, man?
I'm doing great.
So what would be the economic model for you, Jerome? What should we follow to go ahead and get us out of these problems?
Well, you know, first you have to, you want to make it simple. A lot of times things can be complicated when you got trying to get people on the same page. And, you know, everybody has their way of looking at it. And sometimes when we look at it from our own standpoint, it can be complicated. You know, it could be a crossing a T, a dot, and an I that could make things not work, you know. I mean, we know what we need. It's just we as a people complicate things. It's not, I don't think it's about whether or not you know, because everybody can't do everything. I don't know if that makes any sense, but.
What is you talking, Jerome? Hey, brother.
Pardon?
Go ahead, brother. Jerome?
Yeah, I was just commenting on what the brother shared that, you know, what's holding us back, and I think what's holding us back is that we can't really sit down and come to an agreement, come to a contract, or whatever the case may be. It's always complicated, you know.
So how would you approach anybody though?
Well, I mean, you gotta get some people that are on the same page.
Okay, so what is that page we should be on?
Well, I mean, if you're trying to get something, we all got to want to get the same thing.
Okay, so we want to go ahead and get ahead. I want to go ahead and be safe and comfortable in my house. I don't want to hear gunshots and be walking all over dead bodies.
Well, that's probably not logical. I mean, because we can't control. We just can't control the earth that way. I mean, when you're saying the food and the industry and all those kind of things.
We can't control. Wait. We can't go here and have an all black fish industry. All black owned fish industry.
Yeah. I mean, we can. Are you saying our own industry or?
Yes, our own.
Yeah. I mean, of course you can, but as we're saying, that you still got to have the people in place that are on the same page. There's a young man, I don't know if you guys, he's a Southsider, Mr. Siron with the Block Clubs. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
No.
And he has an organization where he puts together block clubs, and what he does is that he sells toilet paper.
Mm.
And that's how he raises money. He can't even get people to buy toilet paper, you know, to support the cause.
Well, wait a minute. See, I got an idea. Maybe he needs to go ahead and change it. He's just selling white toilet paper. See, if he go ahead and put some people faces on there that you don't like, then he might go ahead and make some money.
Well, I mean, we'll see. That's now.
You got to use your creative genius here. Okay, you know, put some George Bush toilet paper out there, man. I think you can sell a lot.
Yes, that you got to get him to want to do that. You see what I'm saying? Although that's a good idea.
He don't want to make no money. He want to keep on throwing money right out the window. Go ahead. Hopefully, I'm riding right behind him and go ahead and catch some of them dollars.
That's why I say that it's not about whether or not the idea works and don't work. It's getting us all on the same page so that we can move forward.
Getting you on I think the best way to get you on the same page is say, look, let's find a solution or die. Period.
I think, man, if you want to go back to the idea of the fish and how to move forward on that, like you can look at a model of Burger King or McDonald's, and you can see that there are successful franchises around the country with the name McDonald's, Burger King, or whatever, Wendy's or whatever. And so there's a model for you to follow. If you want to do that with a fish market, there is a blueprint that you can fit, that you can follow. The thing is, if you're thinking successfully for business, is you don't say, I'm just going to put it in the black community. You have to put it generally. And you have, when you're approaching the American money capitalist system, you have to do it from a perspective that you're coming out to win it. And you want to compete against everybody, and you got to have that belief that you can compete against everybody. So you come up with an idea that I'm going to make my fish sandwich better than anybody's fish sandwich in the country. You're not just making a ghetto fish sandwich. You're making the best fish sandwich in the country. So that's how you're going to sell it. So you don't come out there being like sideways to white folks like, oh, no, this is the ghetto sandwich. You can't have it. No, you want to say yes to the white folks, yes to the Koreans, yes to the Arab people. We have the best sandwich. This is where you want to come to shop. That's how you build a successful franchise, and you just sell it as a successful franchise, and you let people buy into the businesses like other franchises, and you expand all over the country. And then you can put it into the franchise that if you want to have the, you know, the best fish, you have to buy it from this supplier. Who is the supplier? That would be us. So we will make the supplier for the franchises that make the best fish sandwich. That's how you market it to, you know, to win in America. You have to compete on the level everybody else is compete. You don't do a ghetto version of McDonald's. You do a better version of McDonald's, and it just happened to be black.
You agree with that, Jerome?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Well,
I don't disagree, but I agree. You know, and as I'm saying to you that even as you iron out the particulars, that is his idea, and either I can agree with that idea, or I can come up with reasons why I think that okay this or, and that's where I think is where our real concern is. Our concern is not in moving forward on our ideas; it's getting us to do something together that's going to move whatever the idea is. And I think that's where where we have our biggest issue. I mean, I can come to you with 100 different ideas, but you know, if it's not something that, that you can feel or you can see, then, you know, we'll be just going in circles.
Yeah, that's why I think it's important for whoever it is to have an idea to already have it going before you come to the table to argue it. Already have your business in order. And then once you have it, you can say, hey, this is what works for me. It can work for you.
So. No comments? There are a whole lot of models out here. Everybody put out, you know, there's a lot of brothers who put information out here to go ahead and help us, go ahead and do stuff. The biggest problem that we have is going ahead and get motherfuckers up. Everybody's line is open. You got anything you want to say?
Anybody
else?
Hello? I'm still here, man.
I got you, brother. I got you.
Yeah, I just think, I just think that me and International Movie, we, you know, working on the nation building idea by land. And I think that one of the things that we kind of concluded that we needed to do is go ahead and get something started and then come back to the table with the information for people to see what we're doing. I don't think it's enough. That's my conclusion. I don't think it's enough to just have an idea. You actually have to go out there and do it, man. And then once you have it there, that prototype, then you can say to people, you know, this is what I have.
In the next
going.
24
add
hours.
Add to it.
Are you
add to it or whatever. So.
You know, you there are things already in place.
You there, Tracy?
Tracy?
I was hearing something.
He has our mics open. Okay, Rob, close my mic, okay?
Hugging your mic, I'm going to leave it open. Go ahead, say what you got to say, Tracy. Hey, Cisco, that you?
What?
Yeah. How are you doing, Chef Rob?
I'm all right, man. Go ahead. Speak your mind.
Oh, it's a great show. I'll shut up and let Tracy talk.
Well, I didn't really have anything to say. I did want to say earlier that I noticed that, there's a few businesses here. We do have a Black Grocers, but the folks complain of the meat being old, but these are the same Black folk that when in this grocery store, they don't want what they put in their basket. They'll put the hamburger meat over with the soda, yet they claim this man sells old meat. I'm like, well, you know, he got teenagers working for him, and I guess, you know, he's not making a bunch of profit. So, you know, they'll just put the meat back over in the aisle, you know, where it belongs, and maybe not realizing how long it's been with the Cheetos. I don't know. But when I shop there, I try to buy Black first. And, well, I won't say try, I do. So I do spread my money around a little bit, but there are two grocery stores here, chains Lena's, which is also owned by a guy who owns Lena's, owns two Piggly Wigglies, I believe it's two. And then there's, what else he owns? There's another grocer, Century's, and I think there's like a dual thing going on. This one Black guy.
What's the name of the Black?
The Black one is Lena's and Piggly Wiggly. The same guy owns both. He turned his Lena's into Piggly Wiggly. This is the store I'm talking about that people won't shop at. There's a Pick and Save that's right next door within a football field away, and that's where everybody is. His parking lot is damn near empty. If it weren't for the uppity folks, or the more uppity folks, the people with the credit, because, you know, with the nicer cars, they're at the white man's shop. And everybody with the 1985 Cutlasses and stuff, they're at the Black folks. So it's like the poor folk support Black more than the ones who, you know, think they got a little money.
Okay.
That's what it seems that's going on with this particular store here. So, I mean, we do have a few Black banks here. There's a man that owns one, and there's a group of ladies that own Legacy Bank, and they've been on BTR before, too, with Wealthy Sisters. But we do have a few businesses here, but it's not enough. I mean, basically, most of the we own most of the Burger Kings here. There's a black lady, a group that owns them, and but she doesn't take care of them right. She takes care of the white ones. It's just it's I don't know what to do. You know, you want to spend your money with black folks, and like I said, I do, but you call and you complain, and it's like you ain't supposed to do that. I'm like, well, that's what white folks doing, which is why their businesses are kept up.
Right. I think you should call and complain, so go ahead and make sure the
they act like
done.
You ain't supposed to do that because you black. Like, you know, it's like you're disregarded. You know what I mean?
Well, it's almost like you ain't supposed to be snitching.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Right, there you go. Right.
There's no snitching rules, Jenny, with that.
But it's right, it's not about snitching. It's about having our businesses in a presentable manner, which will make folks not want to go way out to the suburbs. Now, I mean, there are some things that I thought that this man could do when he first opened, you know, but, you know, he didn't do them. To make the store more inviting where people wanted to come in. You know, like keep the weeds cut on the side, don't let them grow up the wall. You know, put some flower pots in the front, you know. Make the shit inviting where people want to come in, make it pretty. They don't, you know.
Yeah.
It's like this.
Some things we won't do.
If it looks spooky on the outside, it's spooky on the inside.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, I mean, he keeps it fairly okay, but like I said, it's not spectacular. Like, you know, you get what I mean? It's not like an eye catcher. Like, there's this new grocery that just opened up a little while ago. It's Hispanic and Greek owned. I guess they're doing some, you know, whatever business with each other. But anyway, they got, you know, flowers all over the place, and they just make it inviting where it's pretty. You know, the windows are always clean and bright. Somebody's always wiping the windows. I'm like, what the hell going on? You never see no fingerprints on the window, the door. So it's always a dude standing there watching the window.
What area?
You know, you go
area?
Into the black guy store. I mean, he did that at the beginning. Now it's like it's done. It's turning into crap. You know, you smell ass when you walk through the door. The meat department is not smelling too good because they're not bleaching it down.
Woo.
So I don't know what to do. They need me work there. Is that what they need, Chevron?
Yeah, I'm a chef, and I couldn't even go in there from the way you describe it. I'm like, well, God damn.
What area of the country are you in, ma'am?
He might need to close down. He's probably not making enough money to keep the business open.
Well, he can't when everybody keep going across the street to the white folks. I'm in Wisconsin, Milwaukee,
Wisconsin.
Up from Chicago.
Oh, okay.
A lot of black businesses don't want to raise their standards when they know they should because they feel like because I'm black and I'm in a black area, black people are obligated to support me. And sometimes we just want to feel good about spending our hard-earned money. And sometimes we want to get a bargain because we ain't got that much money. And a lot of black businesses can't fulfill that need. Sometimes out of greed, they get into the business wanting to help black people. But, you know, once they see what it's really about, if they haven't done it before, the quality steps down. And, you know, next thing you know, the stores are dirty, the products are old.
Well, this particular store, like I said, the people who don't have the money, like I said, they're the ones who shop there. The uppity folks who do have the money, they won't shop there. This is wholly, totally different. You know, it's not like they're, you know, saying, oh, I don't have enough money. And typically, we always got stuff on sale and cheap. I mean, their catfish, I'm looking at their ad now, is $3.99 a pound. They advertising it as best price in the city every day.
Wait a minute. That shit was $5.99 a pound up here. What the fuck, man?
No, not at Piggly Wiggly. It's best price in the city every day. cut up fresh whole fish, catfish, $3.99 a pound. They have good prices. I go in there. But like I said, I have a sister who won't go there because she bought one pack of ground beef and it wasn't right. I said, one? I mean, they'll do this anywhere. You go to the black nail shop, you get one person who mess you up, you won't deal with black people no more. Okay, but you have three Asians fuck you up, give you fungus, all kind of shit, but you keep going back to the Asians. You may not go back to the same Asian, but you go back to the Asians. You won't do that to black folks. So I wanted to stand up on top of my car with a motherfucking street sweeper and shoot all the motherfucking niggas going in the pick to the white folks grocery store because I couldn't understand it. So, like I said, the same people who claim that he sells old meat are the same ones who, in the grocery store, realizing I got to get my hair done. I ain't finna buy this. It's too much money, $10 and whatever for this ground beef, and they'll put it in the soda aisle next to the Cheetos and sit there for 8 hours. Okay? They don't put shit back where it is or at least give it to the damn cashier. Okay, I've seen this done.
Yeah.
And I'll put the shit in my cart and then go give it to the cashier because I don't want to buy this shit. Mm-hmm. But, oh, I'm sorry. I just went on a rant. I mean, it's some shit that we just don't do right. And like I said, and then, you know, when this man, if he ends up closing down, they'll be like, well, blame no blacks. Shut the fuck up. I don't want to hear all that. I mean, like I said, he could make it a little bit more right, but he keeps it clean. But like I said, now it's like it's getting bad. You know, it was wonderful for the first couple of years it was open. He got a bank inside. He got a health. You can go and, like, get real quick health service like you would, like, at Walgreens where you can get, like, a health check real, you know, instead of going to the doctor. He got, like, multi-services in this place. But like I said, we love to go get that white man the money. And the store was fine at first. And then recently.
You know one of the things that I had always thought that sometimes you need a front for your business. And what I mean by front is sometimes you can't let people know that it's a black-owned business. That might be something you
mean. Yeah, for real.
Because if you let them know it's a black-owned business, they'll treat it like it's a black-owned business. So sometimes
He should have had 12-foot banners outside with a white woman and her husband
and the baby. Exactly. You get a white woman or a Hispanic woman or somebody with a Jewish last name, and you put that name and they're a manager only for show purposes, and you put them on there, and I bet you would have a better business than or better turnout.
But, I mean, but you know, when we get open stuff, we want to, you know, express that it's us, you know, so you can shop there, hopefully. But that don't work nowadays. Maybe in 1970 it worked, but these Negroes in the 2000 era, the folks who were born in the 70s, oh, they fucked up. They are all twisted. So, like I said, I mean, he could have it more inviting, but like I said, most of the people who live near that neighborhood, look, black folks don't fix up the outside of nothing too much, no way, from my opinion. So, I mean, he was doing what's typical or what's expected. It's not like there's glorious landscaping on everybody's black lawn that's near the neighborhood. You understand? And this is what they expect.
Hold on, Tracy. But what's the so black people fixing up their lawn and stuff? What's the point?
Well, I'm just saying.
What's the point of black people fixing their lawn?
it's inviting. It increases the property value, and it also keeps a bunch. It keeps a certain element away. White folks know this. It's just a plan. I mean, you may not even own your lawn because according to municipal law, you only own from your threshold in your house
depending on where you are, you know, what you have contracted yourself into. But I don't want to get on that. I'm just saying we don't, this is not something that we normally do. Because if we did, in my city, I'm saying, the Lowe's that's down the street from this same grocery store would not have closed.
Yeah.
How does a hardware store close? The rim shop is open, and the radio shop, the one that sells the rims and the radio, they're still open. But
the rim and the radio shop open.
Yeah. There's one right on the corner, right across the street from Burger King. And they sell rims, and they install radios and all that stuff. They're open.
Yeah.
Below closed, but you got more. Because it's what you prioritize, and folks in this neighborhood, near where I live or where I shop, you know, for groceries or whatever, they don't prioritize fixing their home.
But they got nice rims and nice radios.
Yeah.
But you think that the people that's going to spend money on rims and radios is the people that's going to a high-end grocery store to buy their food, or either they eating off of somebody else.
What?
You know, yeah. You know what I find is some people who ain't really, they don't really go to some of them places. The thing that disappoints me in a lot of black folks, especially today, is they don't cook. They satisfy what's going
thing,
on
yeah.
in their. They'll go ahead and get that.
The same thing. Go ahead.
They'll run to the. I see a lot of black folks run to go ahead and all these is in a lot of neighborhoods, so it's close back. They go ahead and get
well,
all
see,
that bullshit.
Well, see, that's one of the reasons why they're. Oh, I'm sorry. What?
Go ahead, say it.
No, I said that's one of the reasons why some of the women that I know complain about the meat getting old at this grocery store quicker, because they want to keep chicken or ground beef in the refrigerator 7 days before they decide I'm gonna cook it. I'm like, what?
Well, let me tell you one of the secrets from Aldi's. Okay, that shit. They probably if you got you why you think they. They just started putting some kind of fresh stuff, but all that frozen stuff they got, that's been in their warehouse for months, maybe in a few years. So anybody be talking that shit about this store, these stores around here, they ain't got fresh shit. And that shit in the freezer. I had a friend of mine, she used to work as a forklift operator inside of one of the places here, and she used to tell me shit, and I'd be like, ooh, ain't no fucking way I'm going to be messing with some of that shit.
Well, I hear you. Like I said,
yeah,
I try to buy black whenever
we're
I
we're in that microwave era. Everybody damn near, like, the grown-ups that you see today, when they were kids, they got out of school, no parent was home, and they went and fixed stuff in the microwave. And
that's
how they parent their kids.
That's right.
You know,
and that's,
we don't see what, I go to a grocery store all the time, and I see these people. I hate to, like, be like this because I hate when people say it. They talk about the people with the food stamp card in the grocery store. But you know how you look over in a basket, and, you know, a whole big old basket filled with microwave food, box food, and, you know, stuff like that. So people is searching for a convenience, whether it's, like, in the grocery store, outside the grocery store.
Jackie, let me tell you, I know some people, and they've been doing this for a long time. They'll do the Thanksgiving thing, and they microwave their whole fucking meal out of it from Thanksgiving.
You lie. You just lie.
Okay.
Well, they get
and it blew me away, right?
Crazy.
They went and bought an extra large microwave so they can nuke this fucking turkey, I swear.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
I was like, get the fuck out of here, man. I'm like, and they was like, come on over for Thanksgiving. You gonna like, you know, I'm like, okay, I get that. And they was like, yeah. And they were telling me what they put in the microwave. I was like, oh, ain't this a bitch? I'm eating fucking radiated food. Nigga, I don't want to eat. I made every excuse in the book to get the fuck out of there, boy. I was like, I'm gonna go get some liquor, whatever. Man, I couldn't wait to get it. I don't be eating up the whole fucking meal? No. Some stuff ain't supposed to be in the microwave, especially a lot of dairy products. That, it keeps radiation. So, you know, you ain't supposed to be fucking nuking that kind of shit. Stupid ass. Man, that shit messed my head up.
Yeah, man, I think that
that's just how we live now, inconvenience.
Yeah.
Whether it's a good convenience or a bad convenience, like the grocery stores Tracy was talking about, there's a bunch of them around here, and a lot of them, they can get away with selling. I really never see them selling bad meat, not a lot of them, but they do sell a lot of bad vegetables and, like, fruits and stuff like that. And people, they usually don't buy it. They bypass it for something else. But you see why they don't buy it. And those that do, they picking through it and stuff because it's convenient and they don't have a way to get to a grocery store that can sell them things that's nutrition for them. So it just builds a way of life for the person that's coming up and watching this. And they see how they parent or grandparent shop, and it becomes like a habit.
So you're in Atlanta, and see, Atlanta does not have any local-owned grocery stores there. You only got commercial chains. So then that's one reason why I don't see why there's not quality groceries there.
But those grocery stores like that, you have a lot of areas where they don't, the people can't get to Ingles or Kroger or Publix, and there's a lot of I don't know what you would call them, kind of grocery stores that you can go through, little neighborhood grocery stores where the prices is high
like
as hell.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of like a corner store.
I was talking about. It's big. It's Piggly Wiggly. And the man who owns the Piggly Wiggly's, he also owns a store called Lena's that he has, and most of them are kind of big because he took over some of the grocery stores that closed, like Osco or, you know, Jewel's or whatever. And we have a lot of grocery store chains here, and they're local. Century's, the one that I mentioned before, that's black-owned, too, but it's a black-white thing going on. Two guys, one black, one white. But anyway, we have a lot of grocery stores here, unbelievable, which is some people, you know, are surprised. A lot of grocery store chains. People shop for food so much. It's able for two grocery stores to be right down the store from each other, and both can.
You know what it is, Tracy? I'm gonna tell you something about Wisconsin. Okay, one of the things is because the agriculture business up there it's a lot of agriculture. It's a lot of farming up there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a test area for a lot of other places. So that's what it's easy for them to open up them chains up there. Okay.
Well,
some of them chains
sure,
are areas and stuff,
here.
So they there's a test areas to go ahead and deal with other stuff. They make a lot of money over there. They get a lot of their produce. It's one store not too far from here called Woodman's. They get a lot of their produce from nothing but Wisconsin farmers. Okay?
Yeah, we got Woodman's here too. I mean, it's so many grocery stores here. It's ridiculous. I mean, I can sit here and name you about a good eight probably. And they're all big. They're not little rinky-dinky stores. There's Woodman's, like you said. And then now we got Cermak. Cermak just came from Chicago area.
Oh, God, I can't wait to get up there.
They don't have it. See, because that's what I'm saying. Because they're dealing with a lot of the farmers that's up there. And those are test areas. That's a testing ground. Wisconsin is like a testing ground, especially that area where you in. They go ahead and come to the bigger market like Chicago. Then they may send it off somewhere else. And they open it in Chicago as one name, but then go to another place like maybe Atlanta, open it under another name. That's coming from the big corporations. Okay, the corporations that are in the farms right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's how they're pushing this whole thing, and they go ahead and swallow up all of the smaller markets to go ahead and get a few corporations controlling the farming agriculture industry.
Well, the prices are sure good. I ain't complaining because, like I said, our catfish is $3.99. They got hamburger meat be $1.99 on sale most times. Sometimes it's not, but anyway, you can get chicken breast 99 cents a pound. Only thing that's high is usually bacon. And
see, when you go from here, from Chicago to Milwaukee, and you stop at those farms, those prices are maybe 75% of what you paying at the store in your area. Because they got these little places where they sell a lot of stuff in these little towns on the side of the road and stuff like that. And that blew me away.
Well, we do have, like I said, we have black banks up here. That Lowe's that I was just talking about that closed down, that was black owned. But there are a lot of homeowners in the area that it's around. There's no reason why the Lowe's should have closed. I don't get that, like I said, but the rim shop is open. there, like I said, we got the sisters that own the bank, and then we got a man who owns North Milwaukee Bank. He owns two of them. So we do own some stuff here, but we just don't have, like, smaller businesses. Like, well, more in my mother's neighborhood, I don't even think they're black-owned. Like, we don't have black-owned cleaners and like, small service places that are needed. You know, just only hair salons. That's it. Hair salons and church.
Wow. So
you know,
I get my hair done.
Smaller,
I get my hair done, bat around with my nice rims.
And go to church. You'll be fine. Hell yeah. So I hope this
y'all
man's
gotta stop talking
to
people that keep their hair and nails done. Sometimes it's a business.
Yeah, but hey, up there in Milwaukee, it's a lot of. That's almost
but
in every black city.
But they're not getting their nails done by us. They're getting their nails done mainly by the Chinese people, except for the folks that are, you know, the upscale who go to there's a two black day spas. But these women, they don't charge $20 to get a full set. They charge you $40. So you know what I mean? Most black women are not going to go there if they know they can get it for
$20.
Mm. We want to be convenient, but we put that out like it's just us. But it's everybody, mostly everybody. And at this time where it's like money shortages, we just want convenience.
Well, look, this is something that I keep trying to mention about the farming thing. You know, and I think my message is more like this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you are, this comes from you know people that know who are the street pharmacists. If you sell the cocaine, I mean, like you more money if you go ahead and you can plant and grow it yourself. I think that needs to be kind of the message, okay? Like if you got these stores, if you plan to grow it yourself, you can go ahead and have more pride in having your own supermarket. Okay, so the hair care business, you know, however you can get the raw materials for that can go ahead and make a little bit more pride in that business, don't you think? Make more money.
You
got control of the raw resources.
You're cornering the market on products and not service more so?
Well, I'm talking about getting more control of the raw resources. That's what I'm talking
about. Right, okay, I got you.
Mm-hmm. Why do we always want to take over here? Why we don't take over the damn lotto?
We did take over the lotto, started with the numbers racket. That's
well,
what the lotto is.
Why we don't take
is.
It back? We need to take it back. I think every time I go in the damn store and I see these people spending $30 and $40 at a time, two and three times a day, I'm like, I'll never see no girl going in a damn weed store and spending $30 every damn day on weed. You know, you go in a beauty supply store, they offer more stuff than that. You might just be going in there to get a hat or some cotton balls or something like that. And I'm like, I think that we should stop these people from spending some of the damn money on lotto or make your own pot, something kind of like the Caribbean people do. Let's just put it all together or something like that. It got to be other ways. Every time we speak about taking over a business or taking over industry, it's always the hair care. I don't know. I'm going to have to do some more research on that. I think black people spend way more money on lotto than on hair.
Because I've stood in line with people going ahead and, you know, spending hundreds of dollars on it. I don't know about that 30s.
But when you look at these people, I used to run a lotto machine, so when you see these people playing these new games like Keno and these games that come out every 4 and 5 minutes, they sit in the store and play these games, come out every 4 and 5 minutes, they paying $3 and $4 every 4 and 5 minutes.
Hey, you know what? The lotto's always been a scam. It was run by a whole bunch of people who had felonies.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in the beginning when they started going ahead and circulating. This was some mob stuff. But it did come from the numbers racket. But when they started going ahead and making it legal, am I right, Cisco?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Especially
when they made it illegal.
In Chicago.
When they started making it legal here, it was nobody. They got the idea from the mobsters. Yep. The mobsters, the mobsters of those eras, they go ahead and show the U.S. government how to go ahead and run the numbers racket based off, run the lottery based off the old numbers racket.
Because that's how they ran Quincy Jones' uncle, Diamond Eddie, out of Chicago, the mobsters that were with the outfit. And, you know, a lot of the other black gangsters, that's how they had to fight the mafia and the Jewish gangsters because they wanted the numbers racket.
Mm-hmm.
So we just have to, like, start from scratch. As they say,
yeah, we put our money everywhere. We put our money everywhere. We just don't see the value of it.
No, we don't. That's why I say go ahead and find a solution or die.
The value of investment. I think that you'll be much more better off investing in some type of way to ensure your child a college education rather than going to spend it on Lotto or going to get $100 weave or, you know.
A lot of black people
don't go ahead and think about the future. Putting things away and saving and investing. You don't know that saving, investing type thing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We've never, and also a lot of times we've never been in a position to go ahead and be able to actually save, to have, you know, that little bit to go ahead and put some away to do something else with.
Well, that's one of the things, Chef Rob, that I would say to a lot of people. We were historically underpaid to the point where we didn't have the wages to invest, like you said. And one of the problems in the here and now, the people on Wall Street that work at the stock exchange, they're pretty much racketeers. They went from the garment district to Wall Street, and that's why the economy is in such a bad way now. Because they really don't want to turn over dollars. It's just like if you pretend that you want to have, you know, a clean energy power station to fund the city, but actually is siphoning power. That's what Wall Street is doing, is siphoning money from the middle class, so-called lower class, to the rich.
Wait, hold on. Let me deal because the brother was saying something about that kind of early, and y'all both threw that same word out. When you throw out that middle class, I guess just the issue I got with that. I think a person calling himself middle class, if you black, that's a different level, a different class structure than a white person middle class.
Mm-hmm.
Or am I wrong?
I know what you're saying, but you know what, though? That goes into racism, and it goes into how our people were historically underpaid. Because, like, a white family that were bakers, like, up in the Northeast, they could perpetually have the grandparent, the parent, then the grandchildren, they could all run that proprietorship and be prosperous, okay? And they would get the wages to make it work. But with our folk, we've been historically underpaid to the point where we don't have the money in mass to even have a bakery. And then because of the stigma associated, that's why a lot of black businesses fail, because you have that denotation that black means lower quality. So when we're fighting racism and when we're fighting for, you know, black justice, you have to maintain that in your mindset that we need to change what it means to have a black business. And it's not just having the business, it's also getting rid of that negative stigma. And on a base level, it's just like, you know, when you have a black business, you need to go the extra mile to make it affordable to be in business. Like, if you have black customers, you know the situation our people are in. Make sure that the prices are cheaper for black people.
You know, let me deal with that real quick. The pricing issue, okay?
Yes, sir.
And this is what I see with the restaurant game, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The problem I have with a lot of black folks, when I see them go here and open their restaurants, and they do not, a lot of black folks do not go here and shop around for better prices.
Yeah.
They go here and get stuck on going here and getting stuff from one place, and they continue to get stuff from them knowing that this place is bleeding. Okay, you can find better prices. I mean, you got here, there's like a Restaurant Depot. There's another place. There's several streets full of wholesalers when getting your food products. I mean, it's about five or six different areas. You can go to a bunch of places where you can go and get them. But I see it's like when I see the black restaurants, they go get their stuff from the local supermarket. Mm-hmm. And then they want to go ahead and do that calculation to go ahead and I can't remember it right now. They're going to determine their price. They're going ahead doing it based off going ahead and getting their stuff from the local supermarket. Not go their markup, when they go ahead and get it from the wholesalers, when they go ahead and market stuff, do that markup and go ahead and really make money, they're getting their stuff from local supermarkets. So they're really not going ahead marking up to a place where they can really make money. They're marking their stuff up to a place where they're going ahead and pricing themselves out of the market. And
yeah.
Instead of going ahead and going to the wholesalers and going ahead and being given a competitive price. If you went and go ahead, here's something what I mean. A case of chicken leg quarters, you can go ahead and probably pick it up from one wholesaler for maybe 58 cents a pound right now. We'll go to another one. It's maybe 49 cents a pound, but one of the better ones, they got good quality meat. If you get it close to 39 cents a pound or 25 cents a pound, you can make a whole lot of money because you can take it and that 25 cent, jack the price up, and probably make about maybe $3 off that 25
yeah.
off that 25 cent a pound.
Do you tell them this?
No. I wouldn't tell people that before, but I'm telling people now.
No, the reason why I ask you this is because I notice that a lot of people, they might get into a business or even not a business like black people, you might get into a position where you don't need, your knowledge of it is not that extensive. And when people come to your aid or try to help you out or something like that, give you some advice, they never want to take it.
You know, I tell people
when
about
the shit
it now.
So busts, everybody fought with deers.
Right. Well, I tell
we
people
help
now.
Each other in many ways.
Right.
You know?
Well, I tell people now. I didn't tell people before because I was making money. It was a secret. Okay. It was like you consider it like an industry secret. So you're like, but I tell people now. I let people know now. I try to go ahead and tell them. I even go ahead and steal and talk to different wholesalers because of what I'm trying to do with my organization. I'm trying to go ahead and get people into the farming business. And if you have to go ahead and deal with wholesalers. First thing I say is shop around because if in a city like this, you can find a pretty much a good reasonable price. Then you go ahead and do the food cost analysis and do that price cost analysis, and you can go ahead and see that hey look that you can make money. Once you go ahead and keep your production costs low, you'll be good in this business. If your food cost is somewhere like if you can keep it close to 33%, 5%,
yeah.
you can make. But with black businesses, their food cost is like 60, 80%. You are not going to go ahead and get no money if you go ahead for every dollar you spend on a business, you spend a 60% on food.
You know why, Chef Rob, from what I've learned here? We have a chain called JJ's Fish and Chicken and some other folks and the Greek restaurant. They go in together and buy their food.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
We don't
they
work cooperative.
All in together, and they're not owned by each other. They just partner up with each other, buy their food together so they can get it cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
We
right.
won't do that because we think we teaming up with the competition.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and here's something else with that. They when they buy their food, they also and check this out because I know a place not too far from here that's like it's owned by Greeks, Italians. And I think Jews, and they own this facility. It's a big warehouse where they buy stuff from different places. They bring it to this facility just to freeze it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see this place, man, this place is huge. This place is big, very big. I think it's maybe like six square blocks. This place is huge. It's a big compound. And I was like, wow. And when I found out what they did there, it was amazing. But another that one of the buildings that they have, that's the first one. But another property that they have, you know, they were about to get shut down by the city because it was infested with rats. Mm-hmm. But they make money with rats. How can a place that got freezers have rats? Think about that.
Yeah.
Gosh.
But you know, if I may say, one of the things that our people don't know is that a lot of the white major corporations, they're connected anyway. That's like Macy's and Target. It's the same outfit.
Yes.
Or I should, you know, Coca-Cola and Pepsi. Pepsi was going to go under, and then Coca-Cola basically bailed it out, and Coca-Cola has a controlling percentage in Pepsi. So a lot of the businesses that you think are independent, they're actually dependent on each other to a great degree. And they're only separate. Yeah, they're only separate for two things, for tax purposes and just to blunt the stigma of having a monopoly.
Wait till tomorrow, man. I'm gonna do a show tomorrow, right? And I'm gonna play the rest of that that Dr. Claude Anderson piece. And wait till you go ahead and hear what he has to say about that.
You got it.
Basically, what he gonna tell you? You know, they taking your money on both.
Now, people that think that they don't work together, you can look on the back of labels and see what companies are affiliated with each other, but that's just us that want to be on a team or on a bandwagon. I got to be this or I got to be with that. You know, we don't take a lot of time out to investigate.
Yeah, what about on a smaller scale? I know about the corporate companies, Macy's or Marshall Fields being affiliated with Target, because when you get your credit card statements, everybody's name is on one. Like Lane Bryant is owned by the Limited, Unlimited and all, Victoria's Secrets, all of them are intertwined with each other. But on a smaller scale, if there are four black restaurants in your city, what is wrong with them all buying from the same supplier and buying together? That's what Asians in the nail shops do.
They don't communicate. They're in competition.
With each other, but they don't want to do that.
Some of them in competition, but a lot of them don't communicate.
They're not selling the same food, where though, I live, they're not next to each other. I mean, I don't see what... it just don't make no sense to me. I don't...
Our people are...
Everybody can't go to one little soul food restaurant.
But you know
it
what, though?
It ain't gonna house everybody. Mm-hmm. I just don't...
But you know what, though, Tracy? It's just like, okay... You have your show, Chef Rob has his show, but we all work together. We're all, like you said, cognitive people, and we all support each other's show. Or because we have trust and friendship, and we work as a team, a cooperative. But you have a lot of people, when it comes to our folk, they're just straight gutter bucket competitors. So when they see another black person, it's like there can only be one, just like in Highlander.
Okay. Well, like I said, I just don't know. I don't get it. I don't understand. You know, some of our black salons would be able to make it if we would partner up together and buy a product that we know one black person has the inside scoop on where the Asians get their products from, because they won't share nothing with you. And when you go to their like nail shows or whatever, everything be written in Chinese characters. You don't know what the hell you read. And they do that specifically to keep out outsiders.
So who's going to all these
hair
salons?
When you're getting down, getting your damn nails done, you tell them all the black business you can possibly tell them. You tell them everything.
Mm-hmm.
They know everything about being black. Then what?
But who's going to the hair salons making this presentation that, hey, look, you should go ahead and unite or create some kind of union or foundation?
Well, I already tried to do that, but they don't want to hear it.
Don't they do that at black hair shows?
Yeah, they do that.
Yeah. Oh, you mean at the black hair shows? Okay, well,
They have down here.
I mean, like, people
always talking
about the crack, the products
it's
are
like
stuff,
the Million Man
Mars
Black
business that does
it. Looks good.
Mm-hmm. How long the Bronner Brothers been in business?
Oh, for like
for
what, 80-something? Yeah. But
I mean, like
everybody
that get product that's in that industry, they should be trying their best to support them because they're Black. I don't really know that much about them. I just know they're Black and they do hair stuff. But that's what you're saying, Tracy?
Well, not necessarily. I wasn't thinking about them, but they, yeah,
I mean,
well,
not
they...
especially them, but if they was the big ones, you know what I mean? They could
right.
have little distribution companies for everybody else. So you can have a your little hair salon,
yeah,
and then you can be a distributor for the rest of them.
Well, like, I don't know what's going on with that. It could be, I like I said, I don't know. You just threw me off kilter, right? Because I don't purchase, they don't make good hair products.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a lot of people who wouldn't want to deal with them, but if you're just talking about some entity that, like, for instance,
yeah, just an entity
where they make right, they make very good hair products, and then they try to promote that you buy in bulk. I don't know too many people who will do that. Although I know some girls who, in the salons that I did work in, the hairdressers will partner together and buy things because they can get them cheaper. I don't know if competing salons would do that. You get what I'm saying? You have some salons that, I don't know. I mean, and when I did work in the business, we would have, like, hair shows, or not hair shows, but we would have hair classes at partnering salons. Like, and they were only partnering because one girl left the salon and got her own.
Mm-hmm.
So we still were friends with her, you know, and then she'll be doing classes on a new hairstyle, and we'll go to her shop because she went to some class in Chicago or wherever she learned how to do it. You know, she paid $200 for this class, so she's going to teach us for $50. So that's what you mean.
Yeah, so, I mean, at some point, the competition got to stop so that the partnerships could build.
Yeah, well, I've seen that in effect, but I haven't seen, like, on a larger scale as far as, because the hair salon is different from the nails. Usually in a lot of nail salons, you work there, you pay some type of fee or booth rental, and the owner supplies all your products, okay? Whereas in a hair salon, usually each, especially the Black hair salon, each hairdresser, she buys her own product. She pays booth rent.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, you know, within the nail salon where you get a percentage of how much work you put in, which is why when you go in there, you see them putting receipts in the drawer and writing on them, you know, whatever. But, so anyway, but I know what you're talking about now once I broke it down, but. Like I said, it's usually on an individual basis. I never seen it on a large scale. So maybe for my
The owners of these places need to come together and partner in some kind of way or form, whether it's for the products that they use or the machinery that they use or something.
There might be some that do that, but the short time that I was in the business, like I said, I would only see that sort of thing going on in a nail salon and not a nail salon, a hair salon where everybody's paying booth rent, and some of the girls would get together because they were friends and they looked out for each other anyway.
Yeah, because that could go, like Rob was saying, with the restaurants. That could go for every industry that we build up, because we build them up, a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it would be nice to see.
Every Black person sending their damn parents to nursing homes and shit now. So we need that. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we could do if we, like, who said that? If we wasn't in so much competition with each other.
Well, you know, that's like even now, IHOP and Denny's, they have chicken and waffles. And you thought that it was with the black neighborhood restaurants that had that, so. Whatever we do, they'll always try and take it over.
Yeah, they can. You're right. They'll either try to take it over.
They try and take it over.
Mm-hmm. Dance, you name it. If it's something popular, chances are, if not 10, then 30 years ago, it was something that black people did. It never fails.
Well, with this hair stuff, I mean, like, you would take it over, too. You've seen a bunch of people that didn't like their hair, but they wanted to wear somebody else's hair that they couldn't produce. I mean, that's to me, that's like a no-brainer for somebody to come in and take over.
That's like the gay white guys tried to take over the hair shows. And that was the thing that's the thing that black people were known for doing. They tried that quickly. Bravo sponsored this competition, and yeah, there was enough backlash that they had to chill out. But
oh, it's funny.
We just had to get over, you know, being competitive with each other, and things will be better.
I'm sorry.
See, that's what I'm saying. It's like I don't know where the mentality comes from, but like I said, it's not like you're building shop right down the street from this person, you know. So I don't see why a couple of businesses can't partner up, and like I said, buy their products from the same supplier so they can get them cheaper, and I mean that helps out everybody. I don't understand what the fighting is. If it's money out here to be made, I mean,
everybody acts like
street dope dealers. I mean, they act like street, you know.
Think about it, you don't need an education to be a dope dealer, and sometimes you really don't even need to know how to damn count. You definitely don't need to know how to read. And a lot of people get businesses and they don't know basic business concepts. Like somebody was saying earlier, a lot of big corporations are affiliated with each other in some kind of way. Like before Coca-Cola bought out their bottlers and incorporated them, those are two different entities, the Coca-Cola bottlers and the Coca-Cola company. And you think in the bottlers, even though it was Coca-Cola, people might assume that it was all together. The bottlers, they worked with Pepsi, they worked with RC, they worked with all of the drink companies. And if you know what I mean, not knowing how business worked, people wouldn't think that. So that's the reason why I think why a lot of businesses being unnecessary competition. I feel like that. I guess it's healthy
right.
to be competitive in some kind of way, but to cut a person's throat and at the same time you cutting your own, y'all both gonna be close.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that was Cisco. Thank you, Cisco.
Oh, you got it, Tracy.
Anyway, okay. Chef Rob, how many minutes you got left? Because I almost thought I was on my own show. I was getting ready to say, it's been a great show, y'all. Until I realized, where's Chef Rob go?
No, I'm listening to you, Tracy. Go ahead, end the show, Tracy.
Oh.
We're going over to your show. That's what I'm talking about. You see, this is a networking thing. We all going to be on the same page.
Oh, yeah.
Time you a star, Tracy.
I was going to do one tonight at 11:30, but I don't know now. You still on Mr. Street Love? You want to do a show?
If you want to, sure. I don't mind.
I want to go. What about you, Jackie? You going to the show?
What time?
I wanted to talk about this new stuff. I mean, the what just happened with the Creflo Dollar situation.
You talking about
what happened? What happened with the Creflo Dollar situation?
Oh, you didn't hear about that?
No,
some
I did.
Some idiot shot up in his church. This morning.
It's just the second time something like that happened.
Second time?
Yeah.
Yo,
somebody went
in
there
in
before,
Atlanta.
Probably like a year ago. They went in there and shot. See? I don't know if they shot and robbed and tried to.
Yeah,
look,
was,
that's another
was,
reason why I ain't got no business going to church. Now they shooting. Get the fuck out of here. They also go ahead and saying a whole bunch of false shit and imaginary characters, but now they shooting in the church. Some
that's
shit that really man that.
It's where they found him.
Out, but it's check it out. It's Wednesday. Who the hell goes to church Wednesday morning? I thought church closed on Wednesday morning, but then I have to realize that's the Bible Belt. Who the hell has a church? I didn't know people did weekday services only at night. They doing them in the morning now, too. Do they pass the collection plate around during the weekday? Do you know, Mr.
Well, I thought those were the 2 days of church, Wednesday and Sunday.
But the morning?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yes, Tracy.
They gotta get ready for the choir practice. But that's a compound. That ain't no like regular ordinary church. That's a compound.
Mm-hmm.
They had service at on Wednesday. We have large churches here.
Bible study.
But who, I just old people need
to
Tracy,
be at
home.
I know you go to church. How old do you go to church? And I know that. Bible study and choir practice is on Wednesday.
I don't go to church, darling. I never sit my children. They went one time and said the lady wanted us to give them money, and they didn't want to go back. I gave them $5 a piece to put in the pot. And they didn't know what it was for. I said, here, make sure you get it to the church. And they kept the money in, and I was told by the lady who what they went with one of their friends. And I was told by the friend's grandmother that, you know, they need, you know, she was trying to tell me the, you know, money to put in or whatever. I'm like, I gave them money, lady. They didn't want to put it in there. My kids ain't stupid. Are you talking about children who will go to school and sell school supplies to their friends? Who, you know, I had a son. I have a pen and pencil fetish, and I used to buy pens and pencils that coordinated with the holidays and just glitter pens and pencils, any kind of pen and pencil. And my youngest son used to take them to school and sell them to the girls in the classroom. He in the third, fourth grade. My kids are hustlers.
I like hustlers. I like hustlers.
Mm-hmm, cause you know, I'll go to like the Dollar Tree and get some for like a dollar for 10 of them or something, and then sometimes I'll find some nicer ones. But he'll go sell 10 packs. He'll sell them like one pencil for a quarter or sometimes 50 cents. Depends on, he said, depends on how much I like her. And he was.
Tracy, I'm disappointed in you. Tracy, I'm disappointed in you that you haven't been capitalizing on that skills.
What do you mean?
With them kind of skills, you could have got him to go ahead and buy and sell his socks. Hell, he could have gone ahead and sold on Empire State Building. You should have capitalized on them skills. He's a salesman.
They ain't handling business. They're handling it.
Oh, come on, Tracy. Let's jump on that. Jump on that, Tracy.
They're handling it. Especially, like I said, my youngest one. He's involved in activities. Mm-hmm.
See that? All you got to do is give him study, give him something to study, and he can go ahead and work that stock market. Because he already got the word skill. He know, hey, buy low, sell high. He got a product, he pushing it. He got good skill.
Oh, yeah, well, not bad as far as what you're talking about, but he has an online or internet endeavors where he gets paid. So he handles his business.
I like that. I like that, man.
You know, I'm not at liberty to tell everybody what he does. I don't want people in my children's business like that I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I feel you.
you get what I'm saying? But, yeah, he's handling it.
He should be ready to teach classes in a minute?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's not what he wants to go to school for. I would thought he would want to be a business major, but he doesn't. He wants